नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाया
Is difficult to chant, so we'll just, with Srila Prabhupada's permission, go on to the word for word. Tatra, to that household life. Gata, gone. Dansha, gadflies. Mashaka, mosquitoes. Sama, equal to. Apashadai, who are low class. Manjujai, by men. Shalabar, locust. Shakunta, large bird of prey. Tashkara, thieves. Musha Adibi, by rats. Upa-upa-udayamana, being disturbed. Vahi-prana, the external life air. In the form of wealth and so on. Vachit, sometimes. Parivartmana, wandering. Asmin, in this. Advani, path of material existence. Avidya Kama, by ignorance and lust. Karmabhi, fruit of activities. Uparakta, manasa, due to the minds being influenced. Anupapana, artam, in which the desired results are never obtained. Nalalokam, this material world. Gandharvanagaram, a will-o'-the-wisp city. Or Prabhupada translated, a city in the sky. Upapanam, existing. Iti, taking it as. Nitya Drishti, the vision, he whose vision is mistaken. Anupasyati, observes. Translation. Sometimes the conditioned soul in household life, being attached to material wealth and possessions, is disturbed by gadflies and mosquitoes, and sometimes locusts, birds of prey, and rats give him trouble. Nonetheless, he still wanders down the path of material existence. Due to ignorance, he becomes lusty and engages in fruitive activity. Because his mind is absorbed in these activities, he sees the material world as permanent, although it is temporary, like a phantasmagoria, a house in the sky. Purport. The following song is sung by Sri Narottam Das Thakur. Ahankare matahana nitai pada parishu pasharya ashadyare satyakari mani. Due to forgetting the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and being puffed up by material possessions, wealth and opulence, one thinks the false temporary material world to be an actual fact. This is the material disease. The living entity is eternal and blissful, but despite miserable material conditions, he thinks the material world to be real and factual due to his ignorance. It sounds like the speaker's kaput. Om Agyan Timurandasya Ginam Gina Shilakaya Chakshur Unminitam Jainatas Maya Sigurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jainabhutale Shwayam Rupa Kadamayam Dhanantisvabhanantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrindam.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare. This chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is entitled The Forest of Material Enjoyment. And it is a very realistic evaluation of material life or material existence. Here Shukadeva Goswami is comparing the material world to a forest, and this is actually quite appropriate. Because when one first looks at a forest, his first impression is, what a lovely place. I've just come from New Zealand, and the people in New Zealand are very conscientious to protect their environment. So you still see down that little tiny corner of the world, you see fresh air, you have fresh air, clean rivers, even the river running to the city of Christchurch, right to the center of the city, and you can just jump in there and drink to your heart's content. The water is so pure coming down from the mountains, and the land is very nice as well, producing all nice grasses, etc., fruits and vegetables. So, upon arriving at such a place, looking at the forest, one might think, what a lovely place. Pretty green trees, the deer are roaming here and there, birds are chirping, there's butterflies, etc. It's very peaceful and quiet. But suddenly the charming atmosphere is shattered by some wild animal hunting down and devouring some weaker animal. In fact, if you've ever lived in a forest, if you ever had the opportunity to get outside of London and live in a forest, you'll see a forest is actually a very vicious place. There's a bitter struggle going on in the forest. Jiva, jivasa, jivana. Every living entity is food for another living entity, without exception. You can see all the different species of life. There's 8,400,000 species of life, so many of them are contained within the wild of the forest. And every single one of those species of life is food for another species of life. There's always somebody bigger than you. No matter how tough you are, there's always somebody who's 1 inch taller than you, or is a little more powerful, a little more intelligent than you are. So in the forest, there's a bitter, bitter struggle going on. Even the pretty trees are engaged in a bitter, bitter struggle. Under the ground, they're struggling for water. The roots are fighting like anything, slow motion, over time. And the trees are growing upwards, battling for the sunlight and for the air. So every day, hani hani bhutani, as Maharaj Yudhishthira replied to Dharma, every day hundreds and millions of living entities are going to the kingdom of death. This is all. This is material life. Elegance is truth spoken concisely. So Krishna speaks about the material world in the Bhagavad Gita. He sums the whole thing up. Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avito arjana mamopete tekanteya punar janmini vidyate. And from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all the places of misery where in between birth and death to take place. So in the same way that one may visualize the forest and initially think, oh, this is a very beautiful place, but upon analyzing the forest, one sees that the opposite is true. So in the same way, by hearing from self-realized souls like Srila Shukadeva Goswami, who compares the material world to a forest of enjoyment, we very soon see the reality. This is the duty of the spiritual master. He is meant to teach his disciple the illusion of material life and the reality of spiritual life. Right now, we have it front to back. What they say in Australia, they say it like that. Backwards, they say, they don't say backwards, they say front to back. Couldn't figure it out for a while. Front to back. So people see the material world as the reality, and they see the spiritual world as some sort of illusion. This is real. Oxford Street, Soho Street, the pleasures that we have before us. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And what's after death? Zero. Nothing. Spiritual life. Look at the churches. No one's going to the churches in London. They're being bought off as restaurants and whatever. Youth hostels and things like this. No, everyone's, they've grown up. People have wised up in modern times. God. Spiritual life's for old ladies and sentimentalists. This is the public opinion. But the opposite is true. That the material world is an illusion in the sense that it's a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. It's temporary and full of miseries. And the spiritual world is the reality. That which is eternal is certainly more real than that which is temporary and subject to disappear within moments. So therefore, Shukadeva Goswami, he very nicely describes material world, material life as Gandharva Nagaram, Gandharva Nagaram, a will-o'-the-wisp city, as Prabhupada translates in the translation itself, a house in the sky. Another place in Bhagavatam he calls materialistic enjoyment horse's egg. What? Horse's egg? Everyone knows there's no such thing as a house in the sky. Huh? A Gandharva Nagaram? You ever seen a house in the sky? Maybe in Walt Disney, but that's an illusion. And who's ever seen a horse lay an egg? So it's ridiculous. So he's making the comparison. He's saying materialistic enjoyment is a house in the sky, a horse egg. You understand? Well, sort of. What it means, it's all illusion. It's not real. It doesn't even exist. There's no such thing as, just like there's no such thing as a horse's egg. Somebody bring you a horse's egg, they'll give you $100,000. But you can only stay on this planet. Maybe someone show me a house in the sky. You can't do it. Somebody show me materialistic pleasure, happiness in this world. Show me. I'll give you $100,000. One time Prabhupada said, I've been everywhere. I've seen everything. My advice? Take sannyas. It's the same. Of course, they're thinking the grass is always greener on the other side of the hill. They're thinking like this. But actually, materialistic enjoyment, it boils down to four things. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's it. For all the advertisement and all the publicity and whatever's going on, it boils down to eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. In different colors, in different shapes, in different forms, in different places, in different times. That's basically what material life is. They're doing the same thing that we're doing here on the heavenly planets. They're doing the same thing that we're doing here on the lower planetary systems. It's just mixed in different ways. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, he concludes, Puna Punas Charya Tachara. What are you doing? You're just chewing that which has already been chewed. Ramanda Brahmatikon Bhagyamanji. You're traveling to different universes, to different species of life, doing what? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And besides that, you're not enjoying it one bit. Because Prabhupada also was very eloquent in his speaking. Again, eloquence is truth spoken concisely. So Prabhupada said, material life? Anchoring and lamenting. I said, oh, can you continue? That's it, I told you, anchoring and lamenting. Just like one time they asked Prabhupada, can you tell us a little bit about your Guru Maharaj? So, Sadhava Sadhabhushana, there's so many wonderful qualities and pastimes you could speak about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. But Prabhupada just summarized it very nicely, very elegantly. He brings it all into the mind. He said, my Guru Maharaj, he was a Vaikuntha man. Tells it all. So material life, hankering and lamenting. Doesn't even give any credit for the enjoyment. Although sometimes, you know, we give a little credence, a little drop of pleasure in the material world. But because it's relatively compared to the hankering and relatively compared to the lamenting, you wouldn't even consider it's there. You wouldn't even consider it's there. Just like they made me a sandwich in Sydney, or several sandwiches. I asked for peanut butter and jelly. Because I'm an American Hare Krishna.
If I was British, I'd ask for purple tea and biscuits, please. I said, peanut butter and jelly, please. They don't even know what it is. Can you imagine? They don't even know what a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is. So what they did is they took two thick pieces of bread and they put a little bit of peanut butter, which they had to spend 2 hours driving around to find, and a little tiny bit of jam. I can see the jam. And I picked up the sandwich and I bit into it. Wow, was it dry. Thinking I have to tell them how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So I couldn't even consider that it was peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It was just bread. So in the same way, they talk about happiness. They talk about happiness in the material world. But Prabhupada doesn't even give it any credence because it may be a little bit there, but it's sandwiched in between a big slice of hankering and a big slice of lamenting, and you know, it's just dry. Materialistic life is dry. But still, the illusion of Maya is we're thinking it's a wonderful place. This is an illusion mean, Maya means to accept that which is not. This is Prabhupada's definition of Maya. To accept that which is not. It's an illusion. It may appear that it's an attractive and enjoyable place. Because Maya is very intelligent. Even great demigods are fooled by Maya's ingenious schemes to keep the conditioned souls in the material world. Very first verse of Bhagavatam, Bhuyanti yat suraya tejavari midam yata vinimayo yatitri sargo. Shukadeva Goswami says. By him, meaning Krishna, even great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by seeing the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen in water. If you've ever been in a desert, we're driving across the great Australian desert towards Alice Springs. It was just endless desert, but sometimes the sun would glare down on the hot desert sand and it would appear that there's a beautiful oasis on the horizon. Cool, crystal clear water. But the closer we come, it would remain as far away as ever. And we soon realize it's just a mirage, a reflection. Sometime you may be on the water, on a boat, and you see the same phenomena, but in a different way, that the sunlight is reflected on the surface, which in this case happens to be water. And from a great distance, it looks like land. I mean, it really looks like land. It's not just some poetic words. If you've ever been a sailor, you know what I mean. It looks like land, but there's no land. And on the desert, it looks like water, but there's no water. So we can easily be fooled. Not only us, but even demigods can be fooled. So demigods can be fooled by the illusory tricks of the material energy that, oh, it's a wonderful place, let us enjoy it. What to speak of us? We should never underestimate the power of Maya to trick us. The only safeguard is to stick very close to the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna, who have the proper vision, and through hearing from them, we can see the real picture. It's like it takes time to analyze the forest of material enjoyment, really see what it's like. But Tattva Darshini, those who have seen the truth, those who have understood the scriptures, and have practically realized the fact, then we should see through their eyes, not our eyes. Otherwise, Maya can trick even a demigod. Like Jiva, Indra. Actually, once Prabhupada told a story just to show the power of illusion, just to impress upon us. He told a story to illustrate how powerful illusion can be. He said once there was a king, and this king, he wanted to entertain his family members and some of his relatives and so forth, and the court and the nobles and so on, ministers. So he heard there was a famous magician in town. And this magician had a wonderful act with his family members. So the king invited the magician and his family to perform in front of the whole royal court. It was considered a great honor. It's a true story, actually. There was maybe 700 or 800 people present. So the magician came in, and it was a really good show. They were nicely dressed, and they had their act down very nicely. They were doing all kinds of things like, you know, pulling different animals out of scars and things. There was nothing there. Like a rabbit would come out and a fox would come out. People would walk. They were amazed by all the tricks the magician could play. He'd make things disappear. Just wow. The kids especially were enjoying it. And the queen, she really enjoyed it. She really enjoyed this magic show. So she actually took off her diamond necklace. And she asked the man to come up and receive the necklace. So, wow, a diamond necklace. So the head, the magician, the man, the family, he came up and took the diamond necklace and he came back. He was putting it in his pocket. And his wife walked over and said, "Give that to me. It's not for you. You're a man." And he said, "No, the queen gave it to me." So she said, "No, I want the necklace." And they started arguing in front of everybody. They just put on a really professional show. Everybody liked it. And they started this argument. It was like getting really uncomfortable. You know, what's going on? What's happened to the show? It was a really good show. Now it turned sour. So they started fighting and fighting like that. And then it was a really intense argument. And the man, he had a sword. He took out his sword and he cut off his wife's head. Right in front of everybody. The head rolled on the ground and it was blood. Yeah, it was just like shock silence. So then the elder son, he took his sword and he cut off his father's head. So now both the father, both the mother, and the father dead on the ground. So then the sister, she took a knife out and stabbed the boy, stabbed him to death, and then she committed suicide. So the four members, you know, it's just, the four members of the society were dead, and it was just blood everywhere, and guts and everything. You know, and the king was, oh. So, you know, he ordered the mess cleaned up, and the heads were put there, the bodies were placed there, and the kid, you know, put the bodies, and he sent them to the cremation grounds. And that was it. And it was all over the kingdom. You know, the king had a magic show, and, you know, it was a really, really good magic show. But it ended in a catastrophe, a horror scene. So it became history. But about 2 weeks later, the king and queen received a letter in the mail. And the letter said, "Our dear king and queen and members of the royal family, we want to thank you very much for having us to your palace 2 weeks ago to perform a magic show for you. We really, really enjoyed it, and we particularly want to thank you for the diamond necklace that you gave us. Please forgive us if the last part of the magic show was a little heavy." In which we performed magic to make you think that we were all killed. Actually, none of us were killed. It was all a magic show. Thank you very much. We hope to see you again. This is a true story. It took place in Bengal in the, I think it was the 1700s. And Prabhupada used this as an example to show how powerful illusion can be. Now, if that's possible, if a little ordinary hand of sleight, as we call it, a magic show can confuse us, then how much more can Maya's show? Because Maya, she's the most expert magician. Actually, Maya, there was a demon called Maya. I'm not sure if it was actually Maya personified or just a person called Maya, but anyway, Maya means illusion. And this personality, Maya, was saved by Arjuna. There was a great forest fire. There's many things connected to the story of Agni and so forth. Anyway, let it be that, because we have a little time, that this Maya was saved by Arjuna. Now, he was a demon. In fact, he was the demon of the architect. He was the architect of the demons. Excuse me. Just like Vishwakarma is the architect for the demigods, so this Maya is the architect for the demons. So just as Vishwakarma can produce many beautiful architectural feats. He made the Sudharma assembly house in Dwarka, where if you went into that assembly house, you would not be affected by birth, disease, old age, or death. As long as you had a meeting in there, no birth, no disease, no old age or death. Now they had very long meetings there, didn't mind. When we have temple council meetings, everyone's looking at their watch, oh God, what's going to be over? But when they have meetings in the Sudharma assembly house in Dwarka, let it go on as long as possible, no one grows old. So in the same way, this demon, Maya, he could create so many phantasmagories. So he, Arjuna befriended him, so he wanted to do something for Arjuna. So Arjuna said, okay, you build a beautiful palace for me and my brothers and our mother Kunti and our wife. This is before they were exiled to the forest. So this demon, Maya, he built a beautiful palace for the Pandavas. Very, very beautiful. And had all types of tricks or illusions in there. And one day Duryodhana, he wanted to visit this imperial palace. So he came to the palace and he saw what appeared to be water. So naturally, you know, it's right in the middle of the pass, so he lifted up his dress to enter into the water. But lo and behold, it wasn't water, it was crystal. It looked like water, but it was simply crystal, constructed in such a way as to appear to be like water. So what he did, in effect, because everyone was watching, he was a famous personality, especially all the ladies were up at the top of the palace watching. He lifted up his dress and exposed himself and walked through. There was no water. He appeared to be naked in front of everyone. So everyone had a huge laugh. This big laugh, because he thought this was water. He was going to go in the water and enter in and we could see him, but he lifted his dress up. He was very embarrassed. So he kept walking, and then he saw the same phenomenon again. He thought, I'm not going to be fooled this time. So he just walked right over it, but it happened to be real water. So he sank down to his neck, and I was completely wet. He was completely wet. So then he took another path to leave, and he came across again a reflection there on the ground. He thought, oh, now that I know, I just fell in the water. This is water. So he lifted his dress up again and walked across the crystal. And they had the biggest laugh three times. Everybody was laughing and laughing. Then he came to what looked like an opening. It was, you know, the door. He just walked right through it. Boom! Bumped his head and fell down. It was crystal. Again, you could see right through it, but he thought. Then he had a big bump on his head. And he went to the next door. And he thought, you know, well, this is a door. I'm not going to be fooled again. It just looks like there's not a door. So he reached out to open it, and there was just air there, and he fell through and fell outside the palace. So he's very intelligent, Duryodhana. We sometimes make the demons very comical figures with handlebar mustaches waxed like this. And, but when we speak about these demons, they're historic personalities, and they were actually demoniac by nature. And sometimes the demons are very intelligent. Quite often, they're very intelligent. Hiranyakashipu was no fool. He had to be pretty intelligent to conquer the universe, to conquer the demigods. And when his brother Hiranyaksha was killed, Hiranyakashipu pacified the members of the family by speaking spiritual knowledge. We're not this body, the soul continues on. Dehi no sning mita dehe komanam yomanam yaha. So, this Duryodhana was very much fooled by the illusory tricks of Maya. And we laugh. See how he's fooled. But in essence, we're only laughing at ourselves. Because we ourselves are still somewhat under the illusion or the influence of Maya's tricks. We often say that one of Maya's greatest tricks is what? Ahamnameti. I am this body. We are spiritual by nature, part and parcel of Krishna. We enjoy a wonderful we're not the body, by any stretch of the imagination, that we completely identify. It's not easy. This is actually called, this trick of Maya is called the false ego. Earth, air, fire, water, mind, ether. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. False ego is one of the elements or energies of the material. This false ego, this trick of the witch called Maya, which causes the living entity who is completely transcendental to the material world to identify with something so abominable as this gross body. You watch anyone walk down Oxford Street, pass some, they have some mirrors sometimes in these English cities, mirrors. You watch and see how many people stop and look. Make sure no one's looking. And they look.
Oh, you speak, yeah, I speak.
Or just a reflection in a window pane? It's very difficult to become detached from the bodily concept of life. This is Maya's first trick. Her first trick. The main thing. We, as transcendentalists, think, I know I'm not this body. Come on, Maharaj. We had that class a million times. I'm not this body. I mean, every bhakti course you go through it 100 times. But if we really actually realized they weren't this body, then we wouldn't entertain sense gratification for a moment. Because sense gratification pertains to the so-called pleasure of the body. So as soon as an idea of sense gratification came to the mind, ha ha ha, kidding me, I'm not this body, get out of here. But if we entertain it, oh, that beautiful girl I saw yesterday, that handsome boy, or that nice dress, or that beautiful car, I was driving that car. If we entertain that for a moment, that means we're still under the trick of the witch called life. We still think I'm the body. Rather, we should be like Viva Mongal Thakur. Yada Padi Mama Chaita Krishna Padara Vindaya. Nava Navarasa Dharam Udyate Rantum Masit. Since my mind has been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in Him, whenever I think of sex pleasure or material enjoyment, Prabhupada said, I spite it above. Spite means spit in Bengali. Quoting Prabhupada's. I spit at the thought. And he said, what? My lips, they curl in distaste. So lest that happens when material thoughts come, because material thoughts will come. We've been here for a long time, so they haunt the living entity, like a ghost haunts you, follows you everywhere. So even the things you did in your past lives, they haunt you in this life, the actions and the reactions. So when they come, we can just say, you can't compare good kirtan. You can't compare to a good Sunday feast. You can't compare to that. Discourse I heard on transcendental knowledge. It's like they had that campaign in America to get kids off of drugs. So the slogan, that little slogan, catchy phrase they called it, just say no. And when the drug peddler comes up on the street and says, you want to buy some heroin? No, just say no. So when these ideas of sense gratification come, as a result of our being in contact with the objects of senses in this material world, we should have the spiritual strength to say no. But if we entertain those thoughts, then we should consider, well, maybe I'm not as advanced as I thought I was. Maybe I have to work a little harder in Krishna consciousness. We're not these bodies. But we may still be under the sway of life, and to a greater or lesser degree, we're still falling for her tricks. Not easy to become free from this illusion. Maya is very expert. Therefore, I remember the concluding words of the first lecture I ever heard Srila Prabhupada give. I remember very clearly. We met Prabhupada at the airport in 1969 or 1970, Detroit. We met Prabhupada at the airport, and he came, and it was a really ecstatic kirtan, shining on the Prabhupada. He sat in the airport in the chair and he gave a lecture, Srimad Bhagavatam class. It was so bold. Just, you know, just sat in the chair, and we were all there, holding them all, the police were there, passengers, you know, it was like 200 devotees, you know, holding them all. We could have been in the forest of Namasharanya or something, you know, with the trees and the birds. And the Prabhupada didn't care, he's transcendental to all that. Just sat down and gave a class. And it was a very simple class about how we're not this body. And I remember thinking, you know, God, I heard that so many times. And then, Prabhupada, at the end of the class, he paused. And then his concluding words, he leaned over and he said, please believe me when I say you are not the body. I conclude the lecture. Please believe me when I say you are not this body. So through great effort, we may overcome that bodily concept of life. But then you may have to deal with Maya's second big trick.
trick. She's got lots of tricks, but she's got two, which are really big. Prabhupada said, there's two big tricks of Maya, which are obstacles for the aspiring transcendentals. The first is that I am this body. And the second trick of Maya, her big trick, besides all her little tricks, which confuse even demigods, but let's just say, her big trick is, I am God. These are the two tricks of Maya. I am this body, and I am God. If you can overcome these two tricks, there's a chance you can become Krishna conscious. Just how hard it is to overcome the concept that I am this body was also explained, or rather, I am God, was explained by Srila Prabhupada the next day in Detroit when he gave his Bhagavatam class. He was speaking how difficult it is to overcome the concept that I am God, because both these concepts come from the cardinal sin of the living entity, that he wants to be the enjoyer. We leave the spiritual world in order to be the enjoyer. So we enjoy through the medium of the body. I am the body, so I can enjoy. And ultimate enjoyment, one is thinking, let me become God. I'll be the supreme enjoyer. So both these illusions have the same source in the living entity's desire to enjoy separately from God. So sometimes there are transcendentalists who actually overcome the bodily concept of life. They realize that they're not the body, or anything to do with the body. It's just family members, or nationality, or even species, the human species, whatever. They really transcend all of that. Like Prabhupada told the story in that class the day after in Detroit. He said, the problem is that when the yogi who's practicing Hatha Yoga, he's practicing great penances and great austerities, and then finally, he's able to realize, to see the super soul in his heart, the Paramatma, the Vishnu expansion with four arms, standing on the lotus flower. He gets that ability to see the super soul, to see God. And Prabhupada said, what does he think? Oh, there I am. Fuck, I finally get to see myself. There I am. I am God. This is difficult. So the trick, the powerful illusory tricks of Maya are not easy to overcome. These two tricks especially. Bodily enjoyment and kaivalya, the desire for liberation to merge into the existence of God. Vipra Krishna says, Daivyesha Gunamaya Mama Maya Dharatiya. This divine energy of Maya consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to overcome. But then he gives the formula for overcoming. This is his mercy. Just like the spiritual master must be very expert at pointing out the tricks of Maya to the disciple. He has to speak in such a way as to convince the disciple, ah yes, now I understand. It's very obvious you can't enjoy in this world. It's so obvious. You look out the window. You can't enjoy it. But we're bewildered. So we need the Shabda Brahma. We need the transcendental sound as it comes from the lips of our spiritual master. That sound enters into our ear, into our heart, and smashes those illusions into a million. This is the formula. Daviyesha gunamayi mama maya dharatya. It's very difficult to overcome, but what is the formula Krishna says? One who surrenders unto me, he can easily overcome. By surrendering to Krishna, a devotee is protected from the illusory tricks of Maya. Krishna's grace, he lifts up the curtain. It's like the curtain is hiding the real play, the real scene. So he goes, and then, boom, when you see that. Oh, see the beautiful. So in the same way, by Krishna's mercy, the tricks of Maya, the illusion of Maya, the curtain of Maya, can be lifted from the devotee. He gives his devotee the intelligence to see the tricks of Maya. Tesham satyade yuktanam vajatam pratipur vikam dadami guri yogantam yenam vamu piyantite. To those who serve me with love and devotion, I give the intelligence by which they can come. Krishna protects his devotee from illusion. You may say, oh, this Krishna's protecting only his advanced devotees like Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj and Draupadi. But no, that protection from all forms of Maya is given even to the neophyte devotee. Otherwise, how will the young neophyte devotee ever make his first step in spiritual life unless Krishna protects him from illusion? Where's the Shastric evidence that the Lord protects the spiritualist in the infancy of his spiritual practices.
Sarvadharma parichaja mamekam saranam vaja aham tam sarvapapevyo moksasi masucha.
He's waiting for Mother Duty to come down and scream at me. I'm 15 minutes over. Krishna says, just abandon all varieties of dharma and surrender unto me. I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. This is not a verse for advanced transcendentalists. Krishna is encouraging the gross materialist. Give up all this other activity. Just surrender him to me. I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Advanced transcendentalists don't have sinful reactions. They're advanced enough on the path of devotional service that they've given up material activity, they've become purified of all past sinful reactions, and they're well situated in the path of spiritual life. This verse applies to the aspiring devotee, the candidate for Krishna consciousness. Just abandon all varieties of nonsense. You wouldn't say that to a advanced transcendentalist. Just abandon all your nonsense and no. He's speaking to the grossly conditioned soul. Give up your nonsense. I will protect you from all those heavy reactions you're carrying in your heart. Do not fear. So this is proof that for one who's even taking his initial step in Krishna consciousness, the Lord will protect that. From all forms of danger. There's many forms of danger, but the most vicious form of danger is to forget the lotus feet of the Lord and to be tricked into thinking this material world is a wonderful place. So from the very beginning, when we begin to take shelter of Krishna, we receive that protection. The Lord begins to help us see through the illusory tricks of mind. He directs us from within, Tesham Satada Yutanam Bhajatam Bhutikur Vikam, Dadami Bhuti Yavam Khan, Yenam Bhutikur. Externally, he directs us in the form of our spiritual master. Their words reveal to us the tricks of Maya. So we listen very carefully to great sages like Shukadeva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada. We'll never be fooled by the tricks of Maya. Even though great demigods can be fooled, the pure devotee is the abode of millions of demigods. You can't compare all the demigods to a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada. They can be tricked, but if we take shelter of Srila Prabhupada, through his purports, we can easily see the tricks of mind, avoid them, and safely proceed on the path back home, back to Godhead. Gratulam Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Shri Gauranitai ki. Jagannatha Bhagavadeva ki. Giriraj Maharaj ki. Shri Shri Vadivandanishwara ki. Hare Krishna Mahamantra ki. Shri Bhagavad Prasadam ki. Yeah.